posts about it or not, I think I'll see you later.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every year. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinians hold a demonstration in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin against a night raid by Israeli forces that left 3 Palestinians dead. Myanmar's authorities open new corruption cases against ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other former officials from her government. Also coming up, the US president repeats his tough rhetoric against Russia, saying Moscow will face consequences if it engages in what he calls harmful activities. Thank you for joining us. Beginning this bulletin this hour with Palestinians who have taken to the streets in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin to condemn a night raid by Israeli forces that left 3 Palestinians dead. 2 of those killed in the Israeli raid were intelligence officers from the Palestinian Fatah movement. They are identified as 23-year-old Adham Yasser Alawi and 33-year-old Taysir Mahmoud Issa. The third victim, Jamil Mahmoud Al-Amouri, was a member of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement. An Israeli soldier was also reportedly killed in the exchange of fire. The Israeli onslaught comes amid already growing tensions in the occupied territories over the regime's planned evictions of Palestinian families from some neighborhoods. Last month's deadly aggression against the besieged the Gaza Strip has also added to Palestinians' fury. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details on the Israeli overnight raid in Jenin.
Well, what's known as the Yemen border police counterterrorism, this is what is called by the Israeli authorities, raided Jenin in order to conduct arrest campaign, in order to arrest Palestinians known for being wanted for security reasons. This means that those Palestinians are engaged in anti-Israel operations or activities or anything against the Israeli occupation. Our sources there said the Israeli forces took with them a Palestinian vehicle, and inside it there was Palestinians. Later it was revealed that one of the Palestinians who were wanted by the Israelis succumbed to his injuries, and he is Jamil Al-Amouri. He was a Palestinian activist belonging to Saray al-Quds from the Jihad movement. However, there are reports saying another Palestinian from the Jihad movement has been arrested during the operation. And we are speaking about a third Palestinian officer who is still in hospital in very serious conditions. Today, the funeral of those Palestinians would be taking place in Jenin. However, the funeral of the third Palestinian, of course, cannot take place as the Israeli forces would remain keeping the body of the Palestinian from the Jihad movement.
Turning to Iraq, where an airbase housing U.S. military contractors has come under a rocket attack. The Iraqi military said five rockets targeted the Beled airbase located some 60 kilometers north of the capital, Baghdad. No casualties have been reported. In a separate incident, a bomb-laden drone hit an area near a base where U.S. troops are stationed at Baghdad International Airport. The sources of the rockets or the drone were not immediately known. Washington's military bases have been increasingly targeted in recent months in Iraq amid growing anti-U.S. sentiments there. Political commentator Angelo John Gage says the Iraqi people want the American troops stationed in their country to leave.
The Iraqis never wanted us there since day one, since 2003. And it's the same sentiment as you mentioned today. And so we gave Iraq democracy by bombing them into hell. And they voted us out, and we're still there because we're telling them, no, no, that's not how it works. So, again, the Iraqi people want to be free from this American invasion that's still going on to this day, this occupancy. And, you know, I want my troops to come home. I want them to be safe. And the more that we stay there, the more these kind of attacks will increase until America leaves or something else happens. So, I mean, this is something that has to be dealt with. Hopefully the United States pulls out, but I highly doubt that's the case, because there's too many special interests in the Middle East there. Iraq and all these other things that we've done with Libya, et cetera, is all there to secure Israel's interests. Of course, the Zionist regime, it always goes back to Israel. I always say all roads lead to Tel Aviv. It really does. But they want to secure the area there for Israel and other special interests, whether it be Halliburton or other weapons companies, Lockheed and Martin. It's a lot of profiting, and also to help the Saudi Arabians with their regime there. And there's just so much moving parts, and none of it helps the Iraqi people at all.
Now, Myanmar's military junta has brought new corruption cases against deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other former officials from her government. According to the state media, the cases are related to alleged misuse of land for a charitable foundation which Suu Kyi chaired, as well as earlier charges of accepting money and gold. These are the latest in a series of charges brought against her. Suu Kyi's supporters say the cases are politically motivated. She was overthrown in a military coup on February the 1st. The army accused the ruling party of voter fraud in the November elections, a charge rejected by the previous election commission and international monitors. Dozens of people have been killed and hundreds of others have been jailed during protests against the military junta. Phil Robertson is the Deputy Asia Director at Human Rights Watch and joins us now out of Bangkok. Phil, welcome. What is Human Rights Watch's assessment of the latest development in Myanmar regarding the government that has been ousted, as well as the demands of the people, and let's not forget the minority Rohingya Muslims as well?
Our assessment right now is that the Myanmar military is using excessive and lethal force in a systematic way against peaceful protesters all across the country. This is an ongoing human rights disaster, and the government is trying to cover this up with games being played, like charging Aung San Suu Kyi with various different criminal charges. These are charges that, in our view, are politically motivated, that really don't have much evidence to stand on, and will ultimately be heard by courts which are not independent, that the government, the military junta, to be exact, controls these courts and essentially will dictate what the courts come out with in terms of a final verdict. Quite clearly, there is a plan afoot by the Myanmar military junta to put Aung San Suu Kyi and her compatriots back behind bars, and possibly quite clearly, I think, to ban the National League for Democracy political party, because the military has realized that every time Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD are on the ballot in Myanmar, both in 2015 and in 2020, that they win the election in a landslide. And the military, I think, is trying to figure out how can they redo the election in 2020, a year or so from now, that will allow them to manipulate the system, to control the rules, and to try to fix the outcome to favor a pro-military party.
I feel, what kind of action is Human Rights Watch calling from the international community to perhaps, you know, help the Myanmar bring back that whatever democracy there was in the country?
Well, we're calling for action on an international arms embargo against the Myanmar military and police. This is a military that is using arms to kill their own people. You know, we're now almost to 900 people shot down in the streets since the February 1st coup started. Well over 5,000 people have been arrested, and there should be no one selling any sort of arms to this military regime. This is something that is now being considered at the UN General Assembly. There is a negotiation going on for a resolution sponsored by Liechtenstein and supported by many governments around the world to come up with a resolution that includes that demand for an arms embargo. But unfortunately, there's been resistance by some of Myanmar's neighbors who somehow feel that it's not appropriate to pressure the government so strongly. And our view is that it's time to really demand that anyone who is providing arms to Myanmar stop. And that means Russia, that means China, but it means other countries like Israel, like Pakistan, like India. There are a number of governments who should be called out for providing arms to a very bloody-minded military, which is using them to suppress the people, really treating the people of the country as enemy combatants to be subdued rather than people who have civil and political rights who should be listened to.
Okay, Phil, thank you very much indeed for your contribution. Phil Robertson there, the Deputy Asia Director at Human Rights Watch, joining us live out of Bangkok. Now moving on, the US President warns Russia it would face, quote, robust and meaningful consequences if Moscow engages in what he described as harmful activities.
This is my first overseas trip as President of the United States. I'm heading to the G7, then to the NATO ministerial, and then to meet with Mr. Putin to let him know what I want him to know. And at every point along the way, we're going to make it clear that the United States is back and democracies of the world are standing together to tackle the toughest challenges and the issues that matter most to our future.
Joe Biden was speaking at a British airbase housing U.S. troops. He did not reveal the nature of Russia's perceived harmful activities, but Washington had blamed Russia for alleged interferences in past U.S. elections. Washington also claims a number of recent ransomware attacks targeting the U.S. emanates from Russia. Biden said the U.S. is not seeking conflict with Russia, adding that Washington wants a stable and predictable relationship. He noted that the U.S. commitment to NATO is rock solid, but said the alliance needs to modernize and expand its cyber capabilities. Biden will meet Russian President Vladimir Putin in Geneva next week. Meanwhile, the U.S. Defense Secretary has directed the Pentagon to sharpen its focus on China as Washington marks Beijing its top strategic rival. Lloyd Austin said the initiatives are nested inside the larger U.S. government approach towards China and will help inform the development of Washington's national defense strategy. The details of the directive are classified, the United States routinely sends warships and warplanes to the South China Sea to assert what it calls its right to freedom of navigation, ratcheting up tensions among the regional countries. China has constantly warned the U.S. against its military activities in the region. Political commentator William Jones says U.S. President Joe Biden is continuing Donald Trump's military strategy towards China. Here he is.
There's really a continuity from what had occurred under Trump, because there's a reaction, really, of the U.S. political elites to the fact of the amazing development of China, you know, politically, socially, economically, and that the U.S. is a little petty in their reaction to this thing, because they're afraid that China now will have a greater role in terms of international policies and the general attitude of the U.S. since the downfall of the Soviet Union has been that really we call the shots, we set the rules. Now, China is not a threat to the United States. It does not want to take over the United States' role. But as a major power, it certainly wants to have a say in how the world is to develop. They've done a pretty good job dealing with poverty. Maybe we could learn something from that. But the U.S. is simply not inclined to compromise or to discuss with China on what they have actually achieved, because a so-called communist country should not have such an authoritative role. So you have a certain amount of hysteria here in the United States, and it was reflected definitely in the whatever these recommendations are, I think are going to be very tight against China in the Defense Department decision today or statement today.
India has reported the world's highest daily coronavirus death toll, with 6,148 fatalities in the past 24 hours. The record deaths push India's confirmed fatalities to nearly 360,000. That after the state of Bihar revised its tally, adding 4,000 more deaths. The country's health ministry has also announced over 94,000 new COVID cases. With that, the total caseload in India surges past 29 million. India has been struggling with an aggressive new wave of COVID-19 for the past 2 months. Strict lockdowns and mass vaccine rollouts have helped contain the coronavirus surge, but the South Asian country remains the second worst affected in the world after the United States in terms of infections. Turning elsewhere now, Peru's presidential candidate Pedro Castillo has claimed victory in Sunday's runoff before the official announcement of a winner. Far-left trade unionist Castillo says his party observers considered his triumph a done deal. This is while the National Office of Electoral Processes, says vote counting is still underway. Castillo is currently ahead with a thin lead of 50.19% over his right-wing rival Keigo Fujimori, who has secured 49.8%. Election authorities say the process will likely take 10 to 12 days to be fully resolved, as votes have been challenged by both sides. Fujimori has already alleged fraud in the runoff, while Castillo has urged election authorities to protect the vote. That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household, and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
New data released on Monday, June 7th, showed atmospheric carbon dioxide reached a monthly average level of 419 parts per million in May, which is not only the maximum reading ever recorded since accurate measurements began 63 years ago, but also the highest level the planet has experienced in over 4 million years. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Atmospheric Carbon Dioxide Hits Highest Level in Over 4 Million Years. Here's the details. New data released on Monday, June 7th, showed atmospheric carbon dioxide reached a monthly average level of 419 parts per million in May, which is not only the maximum reading ever recorded since accurate measurements began 63 years ago, but also the highest level the planet has experienced in over 4 million years. Scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and Scripps Institute of Oceanography at the University of California, San Diego, working at NOAA's Mauna Loa Atmospheric Baseline Observatory in Hawaii said the May measurements, an increase from 417 parts per million in May 2020, mean that the atmospheric burden of CO2 is now comparable to where it was during the Paleocene climatic optimum between 4.1 and 4.5 million years ago, when CO2 was close to or above 400 ppm. During that time, sea level was about 78 feet higher than today. The average temperature was 7 degrees Fahrenheit higher than in pre-industrial times, and studies indicate large forest-occupied areas of the Arctic that are now tundra, they said. The scientists noted that while the worldwide economic slowdown during the coronavirus pandemic led to a significant but temporary decrease in global greenhouse gas emissions, the drop had no discernible impact on the rate of atmospheric CO2 accumulation. As Common Dreams reported recently, atmospheric CO2 concentration surged past 420 ppm for the first time in recorded history in April. Ralph Keeling, the geochemist in charge of Scripps Mauna Loa program, said that the ultimate control knob on atmospheric CO2 is fossil fuel emissions, and that we still have a long way to go to halt the rise as each year more CO2 piles up in the atmosphere. We ultimately need cuts that are much larger and sustained longer than the COVID-related shutdowns of 2020, he added. Peter Tenz, a senior scientist at NOAA's Global Monitoring Lab, noted that CO2 is stored in the Earth's oceans and atmosphere for thousands of years after it is emitted. We are adding roughly 40 billion metric tons of CO2 pollution to the atmosphere per year, Tenz said in a statement announcing the new figures. That is a mountain of carbon that we dig up out of the earth, burn, and release into the atmosphere as CO2, year after year. If we want to avoid catastrophic climate change, the highest priority must be to reduce CO2 pollution to zero at the highest possible date, stressed Tenz. Such a reduction would require a dramatic shift in human activity, especially by the world's wealthiest 1%, who, according to a September 2020 study by Oxfam, emit more than twice as much CO2 as the poorest 50% of humanity. The solution is right before our eyes, said Tenz. Solar energy and wind are already cheaper than fossil fuels, and they work at the scales that are required. If we take real action soon, we might still be able to avoid catastrophic climate change. The new figures come as world leaders and policy makers prepare for the upcoming United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, which will be held in Glasgow, Scotland this November.
IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. The United Arab Emirates, one of the major gold trading hubs in the world. Yet two decades ago, the country was not even among the world's top 100 gold importing countries. But how can a country with no gold mines or history become a global center for this shining metal in such a short period of time? The answer to this question would shed light on some of the darkest corners of the businesses inside the UAE. With no local gold to use, the Emiratis import gold from wherever they can. In 2016, the UAE imported the valuable metal from more than 100 countries, mainly located in Africa, South America, or South Asia. Many of these countries are known for artisanal and small-scale gold mining, ASGM. In some corners of the world, such as the Democratic Republic of Congo and Sudan, ASGM gold is sometimes mined and sold by illegal armed groups. It might be involved in grave human rights violations, child labor, illegal exportation, and smuggling.
When we talk about Democratic Republic of Congo, where gold, a lot of gold has been mined over the years, talk about Central Africa Republic, it's still a country that has been unstable. If you go to Sudan also, because of the civil war, that made the country breaking into two countries. So we have Sudan and then you have South Sudan. All these countries that are dealing with mining, you find that these countries experiencing political instability does not really provide a chance for any regulatory authority to check what's happening.
Since it's difficult, if not impossible, to assure the clean origins of ASGM gold, reputable gold refiners usually avoid it altogether. In Dubai, however, ASGM gold is usually sold in the Emirates Gold Souk. The Emirati dealers accept gold originating from any country, regardless of the production circumstances. This lack of due diligence explains the UAE's rapid rise as a major global gold hub.
We know UAE was for a long time very well known in terms of oil production, which has been going on for a long time. But of course, as time has been changing, then we had situation whereby oil production and also revenues generated from oil production started to dwindle, become smaller and smaller. And therefore, I think which is the right thing to do, it was within the government of UAE to think of how to diversify their economy. And therefore, gold became a very attractive alternative.
Gold imports rose by 58% per annum to more than $27 billion in 2018, according to data collated by the Observatory for Economic Complexity. The process of reselling ASGM gold launders this illicit gold into products acceptable to most reputable gold hubs across the world. According to David Saud of IR Consilium, once gold goes into Dubai, it'll be virtually impossible to ascertain where it came from and under what circumstances.
When it comes to mining in Africa, there has never been ethics that are ever followed up. Most of the time, this mining is happening in countries that are experiencing conflict, and therefore, some situation is about even now get the gold out of the country and pass it to next door or different country. And from there, that gold ends up in UAE.
The UAE imported over 971 tons of gold worth some $32 billion in 2016. And nearly half of this gold came from red flag sources, meaning conflict-affected or high-risk countries.
This instability works for the best interests of those who want to harvest gold in rather illegal way. And therefore, any country that is trading or dealing with countries that are experiencing instability, they are not, no one is checking them properly. And the framework to check them is not available. And therefore, laundering and also illegal mines tend to happen quite a lot. Sadly, also, we have child miners who in these particular countries. And when you see the money they make, it will make you cry. You know, they mint money out of this gold. But where it's coming from, the people continue to stay in poverty. Sad enough, people continue to stay in poverty.
It also exported 846 tons, jewelry and gold combined, worth $28 billion, much of it to countries that would have been prevented from directly purchasing this problematic gold. There has been an increasing contribution of the most significant African sources of the UAE's gold imports from 2008 to 2016. Gold travels to Dubai from all regions of Africa. According to the Sentry's investigation, 95% of gold officially exported from Central and East Africa ends up in Dubai. The fact is, Dubai's lax regulation of the gold trade and its access to free trade zones have contributed to the Emirates' tarnished reputation as a node of corruption. A report by the UK's Home Office and Treasury in December last year named the UAE as a jurisdiction vulnerable to money laundering by criminal networks because of the ease with which gold and cash can be moved through the country. The disastrous consequences of importing blood gold, as it is usually called, from red flag sources is fanning the flames of violence and instability in already volatile places.
If, for example, you are from North Kivu and you are a militia group and there's gold mines there, you are actually the one in control because you already have the power. And of course, those who want to keep on getting gold from you, like even if it's UAE or even a different country, they will be happy to deal with you. So if, for example, a country that is harvesting gold from another country and is dealing with a militia group, definitely that militia group is not for the interest of the country. It's not part of the national government. It's not part of the national army. It's a splinter group. And that this is how these countries, when they deal with countries that are experiencing political instability, this is how they end up contributing to conflict and also, you know, like perpetuate, causing it conflict to continue without an end. Because maybe one country is dealing with one militia group, another country is dealing with another militia group.
By laundering gold through Dubai,
armed groups would have a flow of cash necessary for buying arms and continuing with their insurgencies. Buying blood gold would undermine the rule of law, stability, and security. All in all, the breeding ground Dubai provides for organized crimes explains the quick emergence of the UAE as a major gold trading hub, whereas ordinary people in conflict-stricken areas have to pay for such progress.
In the limelight.
Despite the fact that most economies have been hit hard by the pandemic crisis, most surely cuts to military spending will not be dramatic. The biggest change brought about by the pandemic could be either increased consolidation of the European arms industry or, on the contrary, protection of domestic industries at any cost. We're prepared for you an article written by Igor Kuchma, a financial advisor who is passionate about the economy and the capital markets in general. The piece is titled, Arms Industry Survives but Evolves Amid Pandemic. The article has been published by Asia Times. Despite the fact that for the past 70 years there has been a downward trend in the sizes of wars, global peacefulness deteriorated in 2020. Old conflicts and crises were replaced with a new wave of tension and uncertainty due to the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Global Peace Index 2020 report, Europe was mired in protests, riots, and strikes, totaling nearly 1,600 events from 2011 to 2018. Civil unrest in sub-Saharan Africa rose by more than 800% over the same period, from 32 riots and protests in 2011 to 292 in 2018. In numbers, the impact of violence on the global economy in 2019 represented $14.5 trillion in purchasing power parity terms, or 10.6% of the world's economic activity, gross world product. Military expenditure deteriorated in 2020 for the first time since 2016. The JPI, the Global Purchasing Index study, suggests that both the weapons imports and weapons exports indicators are now at their lowest level since 2009. The safety and security domain also deteriorated, whereas the trend towards more authoritarian government gained momentum. As a result, the number of violent demonstrations continued to rise around the world, reflected in outbreaks of social unrest in places like Chile and Hong Kong. Additionally, the possibility of future violence remains high, even despite the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions. The five largest arms exporters in the 2016 to 2020 period were the United States of America, Russia, France, Germany, and China. The five largest arms importers were Saudi Arabia, India, Egypt, Australia, and China. Between 2011 and 2015 and 2016 and 2020, there were increases in arms transfers to West Asia, 25%, and to Europe, 12%, while there were decreases in the transfers of arms to Africa, -13%, and the Americas, -43%, and Asia and Oceania, -8.3%. Inevitably, the arms industry never stopped improving. The biggest change was the turn towards technology and digitization. In particular, there was a spike in the demand for promising technologies such as fifth-generation telecommunications 5G technology. As noted by PricewaterhouseCoopers, the reason is quite simple. The so-called emerging cyber, electromagnetic, and biowarfare threats are changing the nature of wars. Curiously, COVID-driven supply chain disruptions have not stopped Western countries from investing to upgrade major war platforms, including ships, submarines, technical aircraft, and nuclear capabilities. Besides that, growing demand for newer platforms that incorporate artificial intelligence and other tools to turn data into a tactical advantage has been registered. In terms of appetite, some countries opted to invest in strategic weapon systems and national-level C4ISR, or Command, Control, Communications, Computers, Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance, whereas others poured millions, if not billions, into the development of sixth-generation fighter jets. For example, Germany and France are collaborating on the Future Combat Air System, or FCAS, fighter jet with Airbus and Dassault Aviation. In this context, we could say that war contractors that specialized in digitization could emerge as the so-called winners. To survive, defense companies should be able to anticipate changes rather than reacting to them. For example, future trends could be hypersonics, advanced materials, autonomous technologies, and space. Researchers from PricewaterhouseCoopers came to the conclusion that governments are now far more willing to look at commercial technology, work with non-traditional contractors, and acquire products and services in new ways. For example, Amazon Web Services' ongoing dispute over the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, or JEDI, contract for cloud-based services for the Pentagon, which had been awarded to Microsoft in October of 2019, is another case in point. Despite the fact that most economies have been hit hard by the pandemic crisis, most surely cuts to military spending will not be dramatic. The biggest change brought about by the pandemic could be either increased consolidation of the European arms industry or, on the contrary, protection of domestic industries at any cost. Does this mean that we could eventually see greater cooperation and integration in the armament sector? It is possible the July 2020 agreement for €7 billion, or $8.3 billion, for the European Defence Fund, or EDF, in the European Council's 2021 to 2027 budget confirms this. If not consolidation, we could see some sort of cooperation among companies. Still, as the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute study suggests, governments could still decide to prioritize their domestic manufacturers to support national industries instead of promoting cross-border cooperation. And that is despite steps taken for joint procurement programs, such as the two rival future combat air system projects, Tempest, with Italy, Sweden, and the United Kingdom, and the future combat air system, FCAS, with Germany, France, and Spain, or the main ground combat system through France and Germany. Despite the overall decrease in military expenditure, Sales of the top 25 companies increased in 2019 by 8.5%, totaling $361 billion. American companies Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and General Dynamics altogether registered $166 billion in annual arms sales. On the other hand, over the last fiscal year, authorized arms exports, including both commercial and government-managed exports, rose by 2.8%, from $170 billion to $175 billion. Chinese arms companies' sales from Aviation Industry Corporation of China, China Electronics Technology Group Corp, and China North Industries Group Corp also grew. One of the main reasons could be that Chinese arms companies benefited from military modernization programs for the People's Liberation Army. No matter how bad the impact of COVID-19 pandemic ends up, the war industry will continue to be in demand. The only difference will be the products customers will be looking for. For this reason, companies should start looking for emerging opportunities. And most important of all, invest in digitization and research and development. They could even consider collaborating with commercial players to build and integrate technology capabilities, just as the American government did with Microsoft and Amazon. Overall, the war industry will be facing serious change, but that won't necessarily be a bad thing, for the weapons merchants and their stockholders at least.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one
just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Lovely listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of Muslim Lady. We're proud to bring you this show only on IRB English Radio, and of course, in the studio as always. And of course, in the studio, as always, I have my special guest and darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Dear Zainab, happy to be here.
I'm totally excited to have you with us again so we can continue our active discussion. On the previous episode of Muslim Lady, I had the honor of discussing certain important, significant, and life-rendering issues with Sister Razia Shamili. We are talking about the spiritual aspect that we need to take into consideration before having a baby, both the dude and the dudette, the mom and the dad, the lady and the gentleman. And up till now, Sister Razia, you mentioned a few points, being familiar with the Quran, prayer, the importance of prayer, adhkar, there's a specific dhikr, I think ya nur an-nur, if I'm not mistaken.
Wudu all the time.
Yes, having wudu and ablution all the time. And finally, it was repenting.
Right.
Repenting from what, how, and why?
Repenting of all the sins that you have done, consciously and unconsciously.
But don't we do that regularly anyway?
No, many people don't.
What?
They're not even aware. They're like, they're so immersed and submerged in their daily life issues that they're like, they're just thinking about like doing this business, buying this car, going to, you know, doing things done that they don't care about. You know, actually, the birth of a child or the conception of a child or the new chapter of the introduction of a child to a family sometimes changes people because sometimes they realize the great impact that they can have, you know, on the next generations to come. And sometimes people make great changes in their life because of this realization. And as a matter of fact, someone who couldn't have a child came to one of the infallibles and he said that, well, I really want to have a child, but I can't. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't grant me a child. And you know the remedy for this?
Right.
Constant istighfar. Seriously, for people, actually, one of the medicines, one of the cures for infertility is constant istighfar.
One of the cures to everything nowadays, exactly. When you really think about it. Because, like, we went mentioned on one of the segments, you said, bima kasabat aydihim, right? Whatever calamity and hardship befalls us is because what we've done to ourselves. So if I'm suffering from financial problems, mental problems, physical problems, spousal problems, relationship problems, problems, chances are I kind of caused it for myself through a chapter and period of my life, a state of ignorance, negligence, and this could be a wake-up call for me. So if I do istighfar for like da'a kumail, it's been said that if you want more provisions, read da'a kumail. You want to be forgiven? Da'a kumail. You want to have a vast grave? Da'a kumail. You want to have a good afterlife? Da'a kumail. Because it's such a comprehensive, all-encompassing prescription, because I messed myself up.
Exactly. And da'a kumail is a process of self-repentance, right?
Yeah.
And to go come back to yourself and say that I have wronged myself.
Mm.
I've done injustice to myself. Right. And I am back again. We've mentioned this before, another act to be done, preconception is fasting, at least 2 or 3 times a week to fast. And that's why we said if we start from Rajab, Shaban, and Ramadan, you're automatically, you know, it's so recommended to fast. It's great to do that. Of course, it's for detoxification of the body and detoxication of the soul.
MashaAllah.
Right. When to conceive? A lot of people have this question that actually there are specific times, even for when you want to get married and for the recital of the khutbah of Aqd, or for this contract to be recited, there are specific times that are recommended to do it and specific times that are you have to avoid. And we don't know the full reason for them, but because of these very small, insignificant factors that exist in the universe, in the world, and because they do
seemingly
have
insignificant.
Yeah, and because we, you know, might not even be aware of. So there are certain times that, according to ahadith, they are recommended for conception, and sometimes they are to be avoided and they are makruh. You know, when you have tide because of the moon, the impact of the moon on the sea?
Yeah.
See, that's like very evident.
Yeah, and like 70% of our body is made out of water, so.
Exactly. So
it's bound to affect us some way.
It makes sense, right? Of course, these are to be regarded and to be observed when you want to conceive. Other than this, like if you just, some people would say, well, it makes it really difficult. Every time you want to have relationship, then we have to like observe this.
No,
these are for conception,
right,
for that time. And okay, let us talk about the times. So